Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Swing and a drive, right center field. This one is falling. It's a base hit. It'll go up the alley. Rutland will score. Ruiz around third. He is being waved home. The Phillies have won the ball game. Ruiz slides. Rollins has won it. They stream out of the dugout. Yeah. Rollins ball near third. This game is over as the Phillies strike again with two outs in the ninth inning, and they have a 3-1 lead.
Yeah, now we can start a Phillies-Dodgers series. We needed to hear that first. Welcome back. It is the Midday Show, broadcasting at Stateside Live for 94 WIP's Red October Rally. Tomorrow, the first 2015 guest here will enjoy a free Stateside vodka cocktail starting at 2 p.m. in honor of Stateside being founded right here in Philly in 2015. Come on down now. Have some lunch. Hang out. It's a special day, hopefully a special October to come. Joining us right now, as he does every Friday, is the voice of the Phillies. You heard him right there in that call back in 09, Scott Fransky. Scott! How you doing?
Boys, how we doing?
We're pretty good, man. We're excited about some playoff baseball.
Yeah, why not? Let's do it.
Scott, this is it's special every time this year, but do you get extra butterflies when October rolls around? Like that, when you crack the mic tomorrow night, does it feel different? Or yeah. Have you been in so many of these that it's playoffs?
No, it'll feel different. I hope I never take for granted what it means to be here. And to be in those moments and to have those games to call, I hope I never take that for granted because it's something different. It's, you know, when I got here, 07 to 11, you know, five of my first 6 years we were in the postseason and had a lot of meaningful games, had a lot of big moments. And I knew then that there was nothing more fun than doing playoff baseball to be able to call that. So, yeah, I hope I never lose that.
You know, Scott, when we talk about this team, we know it's different, but we're trying to put our finger on the pulse of this. You're closer to it than we are. What do you see that's the biggest difference with this team this year as opposed to any other season they were in this position?
Well, I think certainly it's different from last year. I think the way they played in September has guys feeling differently, has them, their confidence level is different. It's different for everybody, each player individually, but, you know, you take somebody like Alec Bohm, who, you know, went into the postseason last year and wasn't swinging the bat very well and ended up not in the lineup, you know, was you know, out of the lineup for those games in New York, and you know, he's a different player right now. He's riding high. He's got, you know, high level of confidence. He's swinging the bat well. So I do think that there's a lot of those type individual players that probably feel a lot better about themselves than where they did at this time last year. So, yeah, I think the attitude is good. I think the overall confidence level is pretty good.
I think the resiliency, too, of this group, it's been there all year. I mean, for a team that won as many games as they did, Scott, they had some down moments. I mean, they got swept multiple times, right? Out of New York twice, out of Pittsburgh, and I came on here the next day. I was like, this is rock bottom. We're screwed. And look at them now. But they, every time they had one of those, they bounced back in a big way. And even you could throw the Zach Wheeler injury in, which was enormous in so many ways. But they seemed to, every time there was a moment where you question, is this going to teeter the wrong way, they got right back up. And that gives me confidence because last year against the Mets, I feel like they didn't do that, right? They went down and lost game three, and then game four, was on the ropes, and it just went the wrong way. I feel like they have a resiliency to them that maybe hasn't been there maybe since 22.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with that. I mean, part of what helped them bounce back so often was having such a great starting rotation. And that meant that losing streaks were short. There are always going to be losing streaks, but you hope that your starting pitcher will keep them to a minimum. And for the Phillies this year, for sure, they had such a good starting rotation that those losing streaks never became, you know, 4, 5, 6 game skids. They would kind of cap it at, you know, 2, 3, 4 maybe, and then bounce back.
All right, Scott, let's talk about the matchup that starts tomorrow night because it is not your typical first round series. It's not a typical division series. For my money, it's the two best teams in baseball. I think the winner of this is very likely to win the World Series if they get through the series. You just saw this team a few weeks ago when the Phillies were out in L.A. How great are the Dodgers? Are they very good? Are they great? Like, when you watch them, and I know it was only three games, but just in, when you saw them a few weeks ago, how good is this team coming in here to face us?
This is the best team they will play. I don't know how many more teams they're going to play, but this is the best one they're going to play. And that doesn't mean they're going to go all the way, even if they win this series. But it, I do think they're as deep and as talented, and they're, you know, they're playing well right now. They probably feel really good about the way they played in that series against Cincinnati. They're not without flaws. Every team has flaws, but this is a really, really good baseball team the Phillies are going to have to try to beat.
There's no question. They come in here as defending World Series champions with Ohtani on the mound. Let's talk about game one tomorrow night. Christopher Sanchez, he answered the bell. I mean, I remember when we talked to you, and we were down in spring training for a few days, and everyone we talked to said, this is real. Like, the Christopher Sanchez breakout season is coming. And I always think, Scott, in sports, when people say that, it never tends to live up quite to the hype. He did. I mean, he was exactly what people said he would be. He's going to finish probably top two in the Cy Young behind Skeens. But tomorrow night and this series, this is a different kind of animal now. Like, he's the number one. And if you think about this series, potentially 45 innings, he could take down 14. I mean, he could be almost a third of the innings the Phillies throw could be Sanchez in his two starts. You think he's ready for this moment?
I do. I think he's very much ready for it. I think the fact that, you know, it's 6 weeks now they've been without Zach Wheeler. It's 6 weeks that he's had to wrap his head around that notion that he's going to be the game one starter. I think everybody saw that coming, as long as they didn't need to use him on a, you know, final day clinch kind of thing. He was going to be the game one starter, and he hasn't backtracked at all. I think he'll be good. I think he'll be ready for it. I think he is everything you want to see in an ace. He's got three pitches. They're all quality pitches. He commands all of them very, very well. He's got one of them that's just a devastating pitch in his changeup. And, you know, and I like the fact that he's left-handed to go up against the guys like Ohtani and Freeman. Yeah, I think he'll be ready for it. I hope he gets enough. You know, I mean, Zach Wheeler last year came out of the gates firing and seven scoreless innings, and they're up 1-0, but one wasn't enough. And there will be times when that starter leaves the game. There's no question. I think they will ride their starters as much as they can, and I think the Dodgers are going to do the same thing. So it could come down, you know. The idea is if you're Philly or you're LA, I think the idea is you're going to try to stay in the fight, stay in the game, keep it close, even if your starter isn't pitch perfect, so you have a chance against the other squad's bullpen.
You know, speaking of when you said being pitch perfect, you know, there's been a lot of conversation about Aaron Nola and the fact that he might potentially start one of these games in this series. How are you feeling about that? You know, I know his ERA wasn't what you wanted it to be this year, and it hasn't been indicative of who he's been in the past. But how do you feel about that if he gets potentially a start in this series?
Well, I mean, again, I don't know what they're going to do. I know that's, you know, kicked around the idea of him starting, and maybe he's got a short leash, and you know you have one of the other guys there to piggyback with him for instance. But again, you know, Aaron Nola's got a pedigree. He's got some track record. He's had some really good games. He's had some that aren't as good in the postseason. And I know it would be if they do start him, it's going to be a huge topic of conversation.
Oh, yeah. You know we're going to talk about
that. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And however it works, it's going to be a huge topic of conversation for a long time, I think.
Yeah. It's the other day when and Topper's going to speak at 1:15 today, so we'll see what he says or if he says anything. But when he was on the morning show on WIP the other day, he kind of alluded to it might be. And if they do that, I'm wondering, does that mean whoever is his piggyback could pitch tomorrow out of the bullpen? Like, I'm wondering what you – because you only need three starters in this series, right? With the days off. You don't need a fourth starter. So if they use Aaron Nola, that other starter, which I guess could be Ranger Suarez, if they're penciling Luzardo in, he could be used in a different way. Because game three isn't until Wednesday night, right? You have the day off tomorrow – excuse me, day off Sunday and then day off Tuesday for the travel day. Do you think they could do that? Like, if they pencil Nola in as the starter for game three, potentially Ranger out of the bullpen tomorrow?
Potentially. I think, you know, the way I understand it, you know, Jesus went to him at one point and said, look, if I'm not starting game, you know, till game three, I'm happy to come out of the bullpen. He's done it before. And I think the thing you get with Jesus is you get a left-hander who is dominant against lefties. Yeah. Ranger is more an even split kind of guy. But I do think Lizardo gives you the option of, you know, let's say you start Nola in game two. Let's say you go that route. And your plan is to have Lizardo piggyback with him. Dodgers load up on left-handed bats in their starting lineup. And maybe Nola goes one time through the order. Maybe he goes a time and a half. Maybe he gets into the fourth or fifth, and then you flip the script and you go to Lizardo. And if you did that, if he pitched on Monday, he could still come back and potentially be available, certainly for Game 5, to close it out back here on the following Saturday. So there's a lot of things that they're kicking around. I do think that if you start Nola, it will be a situation where he's watched really closely. And if there's any signs, of the stuff not being there or the command not being there, then I think you would end up with a quick hook.
Scott Fransky with us here. It is our Red October Rally at Stateside Live. Come on by. Lot S is where you can park and walk over. It's an exciting day here through 6 p.m. today. Afternoon show after us. John Middleton's going to be live at 3 o'clock today, so come on by as we get ready for tomorrow, which should be an awesome atmosphere at Citizens Bank Park. All right, Scott, let's talk about Bryce Harper. You've called the moments. There's been a lot of them. He has been one of the great October performers ever, certainly of this generation. I don't think he had a great year. I thought it was good. And by his standards, not great, because his standards are so high. He's a future Hall of Famer. What do you expect? Because I think he's going to have a big October. I always think he's going to have a big October, especially, 22, his first October here. He went into that postseason not hitting well. All right, he didn't hit well in September. He had a lot of injuries that year, and then it was like a switch flipped, right? That home run he hit off of Michaelis in St. Louis. Your expectation for Bryce this October?
Yeah, I think that's a reasonable expectation to think that he can have a big October. I think whether it's Trey or Kyle or Bryce, I think you're talking about players that can get so hot that they carry a team through a series, through a week, through a couple of weeks, whatever the case might be. Is it a must? Somebody needs to step up.
Right.
Somebody's going to have to swing the bat. Somebody's going to have to come through in big moments, two outs, runners in scoring position, that kind of thing, come up with big base hits. And I think, he's as good a candidate as anybody, given the track record, to be that guy. And I'm with you. I mean, his year, and he would probably tell you the same, he wanted probably more out of his year. From an offensive standpoint and personal numbers, but he understands the long game. He understands what's ahead of him, and a little bit like the way Mookie Betts. I don't know how much of that Dodgers series you watch, but Betts had a really bad year, but he finished strong and he had a huge first round, and that's all any player can do. What has happened has already happened. And they can't dwell on that. And as an athlete, they've only got their next at bat and their next chance in the field and what's still to come, the next game on the schedule. So you can put all of you start over, you're 0-0, and you can pen the narrative however you'd like based on what happens over the next few weeks.
Speaking of Betts, Ohtani, a couple nights ago,
see what you did there.
Yeah, that's
when Betts got a big hit. He talked after the game about he wouldn't be surprised if teams pitched around Shohei. He wouldn't pitch to Shohei. How do you think the Phillies are going to approach that? Because typically when there's a player as good as Shohei Ohtani, you try not to pitch to him in a big moment. They have Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman behind him. As dangerous as it is, Scott, I couldn't just put free base runners on for that Dodgers lineup.
That don't seem smart.
I don't think they are. Based on what I've seen from Rob Thompson over the years and even seeing the way they have managed games against Ohtani and the Dodgers, their preference has been generally to go after him. Mm-hmm. And you do it with the right pitchers.
Right. Like a Matt Strom has had a lot of success.
Absolutely. And you've got a bunch of left-handers you're going to be rolling out there in some form or fashion, be it as a starter or a reliever. And I think you try to gain that whatever that matchup advantage is. It's still going to come down to execution. I mean, if you watch that game the other night, any of those games the other night, the Reds are leaving pitches in the middle of the plate. And, you know, the Phillies have places they feel like they can go to get Ohtani out. Mm-hmm. But it's not going to be in the middle of the plate, generally. So that, in that regard, it comes down to execution. So is Matt Strom, for instance, executing his pitches the way he wants to? Can he get in above his hands and above the barrel and get the swing and miss that he's looking for? So I think you still stay with that idea that, you know, if you have the right matchup, you're going to go after him. You're going to try to get him out because I think, by and large, they've done a pretty good job of that.
They have. Scott Fransky with us here. Red October Rallies. We get set for tomorrow night, game 1, 6:38, and then 6:08 on Monday night for game number 2. Scott, as much as it's always about the players, managers play a big role in October. They make a lot of decisions, and moments happen, and they affect the moments. One thing when I was watching the games the last few days is some of these managers are very aggressive with using their best reliever in the biggest moments, right? Yeah. The Phillies have done that in the past, but they haven't had a closer quite like Duran to just kind of leave the ninth inning to. Do you think they would use Duran in an earlier part of the game, or is it he's the ninth inning guy and we base everything off of that? Because I'm just wondering, let's say they've used Strom in the sixth inning, and then the eighth inning rolls around. And yeah. Here comes Ohtani.
Yeah.
It's a one-run game.
I think they will be willing to use him for more than just the ninth inning. I don't think there's any question. I think they realize why they got him, and they got him for this reason.
Right.
You know, you look at the difference between – I don't have the numbers in front of me, but if you go back and you look at the difference between the starters the last 2 years in the postseason and the relievers the last 2 years in the postseason, it is glaring. It is a huge difference in the effectiveness of those two units. So I do think Rob will be plenty willing to go to Duran in a spot in, you know, I mean, is he going to be in the sixth? No, I don't think so. But I do think that the eighth inning is absolutely fair game for Duran if the situation is right and they've got the extra off day. There's only one spot where you might have to pitch 2 days in a row. So that's helpful to that end. You can still run him out there for two innings, know he's going to get a day off and you know, be able to come back out there for another inning, you know, day after next or whatever. So I think they will be pretty aggressive with him.
Well, I think they should be. I mean, Hugh, they traded for this guy. He's been really good since he got here. And if he can go more than one inning, that changes the calculus on the whole game.
It's all hands on deck. That's how I look at it, and I think that's how this team is going to approach it. You know, when we talk about pitching, it's going to be probably – you don't have the luxury of waiting around and let somebody work their way out of anything.
Right, yeah, of course.
This is an all-hands-on-deck situation, and like Scott said, this is the best team that you're facing all year long, so you got to pull out all the stops to get past this to get to the next one.
Yeah, because it's such a short series, it can turn on you quickly. And, you know, we talk about how the Phillies have been pretty consistent all year. That's great. That works a little bit better in a 7-game series than it does in a 5-game series. So if you get that opportunity tomorrow to lock down a game and it requires you to go to Duran in the eighth inning, so be it. Go to Duran in the eighth inning, and I think they'll do that.
Scott, how do we think the lineup might look? I mean, they have some options. It's certainly deeper. You know, I was saying earlier, last year heading into the postseason, Castellanos was their cleanup hitter. Obviously, his role has changed, and he's probably not going to start most of the games this series. It just shows how much they've changed and evolved. Alec Bohm came back. He hit well the last couple weeks. We've seen that before in October. He hasn't played his best in October. Maybe this one will be different. There's also the Harrison Bader thing. I remember when they first got him, we talked to you about it, and you talked about you could see him hitting anywhere, 4, 5, 6, 7, and it's kind of floated that way. How do you think that beyond Bryce in the lineup will look, and are we looking at Bohm in that cleanup spot?
I think Bohm probably takes the cleanup spot. And again, I know there's some debate about, you know, I heard you guys talking on my drive down here talking about, you know, whether you really want Schwarber and Harper back-to-back. Well, it is something they've done all year. I tend to think they'll stay with it, and they'll go Trey, Kyle, Bryce, and Alec. And one of the reasons for Alec there, A, he's, you know, swinging the bat well. But B, he's not a guy who strikes out a ton, and I think they value that in that spot, in the cleanup spot. The fact that if you get runners on base, you know, Alec's not going to go up there. He's not a 50 home run guy, so he's not going to go up there looking to necessarily hit a home run. He's trying to use the middle of the field, put the ball in play, hit it hard somewhere. And I think that for their money that, you know, given the other options, I think that's probably the way it goes. And then you you know, I think, you know, anytime a right-hander's out there, so Saturday, you know, with Ohtani, it'll be Brandon Marsh. And then I think you play with, you know, maybe Bader, six, JT somewhere in there, seven, Bryson Stott, eight, and
Kepler.
Kepler, yeah. I mean, maybe Kepler hits seventh behind Bader, and then you go JT eight and Stott nine to keep mixing and matching the lefties. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that when you said that, that makes you feel how much deeper things are than maybe a year ago or 2 years ago.
Sure.
JT eight and Stott, I feel like it might be the most underrated thing the last 2 months. He's really hit since the end of July. He's become the player I think we wanted him to be, thought maybe he could be, and then I don't know what happened for that two-year span. He just wasn't that guy. But yeah, the guy he's been the last 2 months, that's an impactful nine-hitter.
Well, I'll give him some credit for making some changes. I mean, they brought him some ideas that they thought could help him, and changing his setup pre-pitch, moving his hands down, quieting things down. And then they've got him a little more on top of the plate. You know, so many people were pitching him away, 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 and he's popping all those balls out to left field. Well, now they're not as far away because right, he's right on top of the plate and he's turning on balls. And, I think he could be a really big bat. I think he and Marsh have the potential to be huge for the Phillies. You know, especially in those games, Ohtani, Yamamoto, if Glasnow's in the game, guys like that, they could be huge for the Phillies.
How much stock do you put into Phillies 4, Dodgers 2, the six times they played this year? Because, I mean, one of those series was a few weeks ago, so that's fresh in our mind. But I was looking back this morning at that first series. I mean, these rosters are so much different. Sasaki right, started one of the games. He's right, now maybe their closer. I think Jordan Romano closed the first win over the Dodgers this season. I mean, he's obviously nowhere to be found at this point. I mean, they are the same core of the teams, clearly, but April feels like a long time ago.
It was a long time ago. Yeah. It was a long time ago. I think, you know, they were talking about it the other night when Yamamoto was pitching, and they brought up that game where he took the no-hitter in Baltimore.
Yes, in
two
early
outs
September,
in the ninth inning,
yeah,
and Gunnar Henderson hit a home run off him, broke up the shutout. Dodgers end up losing that game, unbelievably so. And from there to the end of the season, they went 15-5. They lost two out of three in that stretch to the Phillies. Phillies played them really well. They did so by winning the first game, clinching the division, still coming back to win another game in that series. So I do think, you know, the Phillies, another number that I'll throw at you for the Phillies is that they have more wins this year when scoring three runs or less than anybody in baseball. And they had by far, believe it or not, the other club was Pittsburgh. I think they finished with 25 wins, maybe 26 with the one, I think the last one.
That's a lot with not many runs.
It's a lot. Yeah. And their winning percentage was far and away the best in baseball when scoring three runs or less. They know how to win close, low-scoring games. Will they be in close, low-scoring games? I bet they'll have some along the way. And those are the games that can be decided by getting a runner home from third in the third inning. Right, and just that one extra run, and yep, all of a sudden later in the game you're like, wow, that was a big run. And I think they have shown the ability to be able to do that. They're definitely different. Both of them are different teams than they were. They're playing differently. They have different guys that are hot and different guys that are not, you know, judge, you know, based in terms of the April series. But I do look at the one on the road at Dodger Stadium, and the Phillies played some of their best baseball of the year, quite
they
frankly.
They did. 215-592-9494 to join the show. Our broadcasting from Stateside Live for 94 WIP's Red October Rally. Devin Caney's going to join us and be part of the show as well. Topper's going to talk at 1:15. We will carry that. Come on out and join us for the Red October Rally. John Middleton will be here live at 3 p.m. today with the afternoon show. When we get back, let's talk about a guy whose name didn't really come up much there, but he could have a role, potentially a big one in this series. All coming up, Scott Fransky with us on Sports Radio 94 WIP.
Let's take a look at the Pro Football Injury Report presented by Fanatics Sportsbook. For Denver, we got Marvin Mims Jr. He's questionable with a hip. We also have questionable Nate Atkins, questionable with a concussion. And for Philadelphia, we have Grant Calcaterra. Matter of fact, we got both of the tight ends. Grant Calcaterra is sick right now. And Dallas Goedert is dealing with a knee injury. This football season, where else would you want to be other than with my friends at Fanatics Sportsbook? Fanatics Sportsbook is the home for fair play, protecting all pro football player prop bets across straights, parlays, and SGPs all season long for any first half injury. They were the first to protect your prop bets throughout the first quarter, and now they've extended that protection throughout the whole first half. That's 30 minutes of player prop protection on all bets, whether it's quarterbacks, running backs, receivers, or even defensive players. Fanatics Sportsbook Fair Play policy gives you the edge when it comes to cooking up a parlay. Why stick with a book that leaves you empty-handed when you can bet on one that has your back the whole first half? If you want to protect your parlays from injuries, switch to the sportsbook that will always have your back across the first and the second quarter for all pro football player games, every single game, all season long. Fanatics Sportsbook, winning hits different here. That's today's report. Listen all season long for weekly injury updates. Presented by Fanatics Sportsbook, the home of Fair Play. Download the app today. Must be 21 plus. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Two balls, two strikes to Bryce Harper. Suarez delivers. Swing and a drive. Left field. It's deep. It's going.
Yes!
And it is gone.
Yes! Yes.
It is bedlam at the bank as Bryce Harper has put the Phillies on top.
Are you kidding me?
His 10th career home run in the postseason. And he may never hit a bigger one.
Welcome back, broadcasting from Stateside Live for 94 WIP's Red October Rally. Hugh Douglas, Joe Giglio, the voice there, Scott Fransky with us. Bedlam at the bank a few years ago. What is it like, Scott, as we welcome in our next guest, Devin Caney, who's joining us. But Scott, what is it like to be in the building when it's that loud? Is that, do you feel it calling the game? Do you you feel the noise?
Yeah, we do. That day, it felt like the place was shaking. I mean, it really did. And we've been in some older ballparks that feel that way. I remember there was a game at Wrigley, and the press box in Wrigley, you're not quite hanging from the roof, but it kind of feels that way sometimes. And
Those old buildings,
I know. They make me feel like I'm back in the minor leagues sometimes. But I'm like, am I at Wrigley or am I in Cedar Rapids, Iowa? But there was a – I think it was Jason Hayward hit a walk-off grand slam in a game there, and the place was – literally shaking. That's what it felt like.
Is that off of Adam Morgan?
What a memory. Yeah. It was off Adam Morgan.
Those old nights when I was on after you guys. I went through a lot of those bad bullpen nights.
Yeah, it was Adam Morgan. Yeah.
That sounds kind of scary, though, Scott. That don't sound exhilarating if the building's shaking.
No, I don't like it.
That's part of the atmosphere.
Like, I was thinking about that because when we did the football game last year for Thanksgiving. When John and
Turkey Bowl.
Turkey Bowl, yeah.
Dog, that building was shaking, and I left. I'm like, no.
You're scared.
Oh, hell yeah. Scott, listen. I know you know that the rain and certain, like, structural damage. No, I don't play around with that stuff.
Okay. We remember the rain, the great midday flood of 2025.
That's right.
All right, let's welcome in Devin Caney, who joins us here as she is set for Red October. Devin, how you doing?
We are officially in, like, Red October, Eagles football, you know, craziness.
We are in the throes.
We are, yes. It has begun, and I love it. I live for it. I'm a little stressed out, but I'm okay with it. I feel good about this series.
I'm curious. Why are you stressed out, though, Dev?
Oh, we're all stressed out.
I am not stressed out. This is a team of destiny.
I'm not stressed. I feel very good about the Phillies, actually. Mm-hmm. I think their sense of, like, cool confidence is kind of like, I can sense that from the team. They don't feel like they know that they can beat any opponent that they have to face. So I'm okay with that. I just meant my own personal schedule.
I got you.
Yeah,
you guys are better than me. I feel like I'm going to throw up until the series
this
is over.
I feel that way, and I don't feel that way.
This is what you live for, though, man. I mean, like, to be – like, I compare this almost to the three NFC championship games that I was in. You know, you lose the first two, and now you're looking at it, okay, now you feel like you have it figured out. Now, the morning of, you have, like, butterflies, but this is the first phase. And you've – I mean, when you talk about the way that this team has been playing, they look totally different than they've done any other time that I've been here. And they have hitting throughout the lineup. I think that's the most important thing.
So that's an interesting comp, you, this group to your group, right?
Yes.
The Eagles teams 2001 to 2004. Did you feel going into that postseason like this is... this might be our last shot? Because with this group...
the last one, definitely.
There's a sense, and look, they could keep all these guys. I'm not saying next year they won't be really good, but you factor in their age, the free agents-to-be, Wheeler's injury. This might be the last great shot they have. Did you guys feel that? Did you talk about it going into the 04 playoffs?
You started talking about it. Like this is how the conversation shifts. Like, the first time you're going to be like, hey, man, we got something good here, that we could do this for a couple more years. And then when those years started to pile up, then you're like, damn. We need to break through, you know, because if we don't, this might be the last run that we have. And I feel like that's probably how they're feeling. When we talk about Bryce Harper, Bryce Harper's been for what, six seasons? Something like that?
Seven now.
Seven seasons. Yeah. And you talk about what it was when he got here and how excited everybody was. And on top of that, the Nationals won when he left. So now as Bryce gets older and his body starts... he's starting to show wear and tear. I mean, he's still a phenomenal player, no question about that, but he's starting to show wear and tear. At some point as a professional athlete, when you've made the type of money that Bryce has made and you've gotten all the accolades that he's gotten, that's the one that's eluding you. That's the one that you want the most, you know. So that's probably where he is right now. A couple other guys on the team have won, but as a collective, as a group, they haven't won. So that's what you start to think about. It might not be said directly, but as you get older and your body starts to feel a little different, you start to think about that stuff.
Well,
really,
and I'm glad you bring up the fact that the Nationals won after Bryce Harper left, because, like, immediately after he left, I feel like that's a narrative we don't really talk about a lot. And I'm not saying that that's all that drives him. You know, we know Bryce Harper is motivated on his own, and he loves playing for Philly. And I know that a lot of the players, if not all of them, want to bring a championship for the fans who show up every single night to watch a play when they're here. But I just feel like that has to eat at him.
It does.
And, like, it's not something you're going to ever admit out loud, but, like...
You know what, Dev? And I can say this because me and I, we commit... well, we don't do it as much as we did a few years ago. But after every Super Bowl, after the one that we played in, for, like, 5 or 6 years, it was always like, damn. Mm. We were 3 points away. Like, we used to talk about how different life would have been. You know what I mean? Life is good. Now, don't get me wrong. It's great. But winning a championship hits different. Mm. You know what I mean? And being a part of a championship team. Now, I you know, when you talk about playing in the Super Bowl and being an older gentleman and all those years behind me, that was a great accomplishment when you look at it. Didn't win it all, but when you talk about the history of the NFL, ain't a whole lot of cats been to a Super Bowl. That's a fact. But when you talk about being in a position to win one, and don't win it, that hits a little different. That hits a lot different, I should say.
Yeah, I think for Bryce, I would have think he'd agree with me. I think his career is incomplete without a World Series. He's a great player. He's going to go to the Hall of Fame. But he needs to win a World Series. I mean, he's been one of the faces of baseball for all these years. He's hit in October, so I don't think it's his fault his teams haven't won. But, like, sometimes there are players that they just don't never get there, right? They're on bad teams. Mike Trout, right? He just barely ever made the playoffs. Bryce has been in the playoffs. I mean, Scott, he's been in the playoffs a lot. Obviously, here now 4 years in a row. But those Nationals teams, they were in a few times. So it's probably 7 or 8 playoff trips now. I mean, I got to feel like, I think Topper said the other day on WIP that Bryce is uniquely motivated, as motivated as anyone has ever been around to win. I'm sure he's feeling that as the years go on.
I don't think you can't. I just feel like he you don't get to the level he's at, and you don't compete on a day-in and day-out basis at that sort of level without having the desire to win it all, and for that to be the ultimate goal. And it's always been the ultimate goal for him. And like you said, it's not all on him. In years past, he's hit well in October for the Phillies, and that hasn't always, you know, meant – obviously hasn't meant getting to the finish line. So I do think he wants to get there. I think he's not alone in that. I think even guys who are younger, you know, I don't know, throw Alec Boehm or Brandon Marsh out there, right? They haven't been to the playoffs as many times, but this is their fourth crack at it with this same group, this same basic group. And they're probably tired of coming up short.
I'm sure they are.
And, again, this is it stinks in a way that this is the first matchup, you know, to have to come out cold. You haven't played in a week. and to have to face this team, because I do think, as I said before, this is the best team they're going to play. And the winner of this could very well end up winning the World Series. Maybe. Maybe they get just so beat up trying to get through this series. It takes so much out of them. Who knows? But I do think that, yeah, Bryce really wants that for the to complete the resume.
Devin, do you expect Bryce to have a big October? Because his regular season was pretty good, right? Good, pretty good.
Yeah.
By his standard, not as great as normal. I think he's going to have a huge October. This is what he does. I mean, we brought this up the other day, and Hugh was kind of lowering the bar for Bryce. I call him Lower the Bar Douglas when he doesn't want to.
See, we play semantics around
No.
We play semantics. So tell him how you frame the question, Joe, because he likes to twist words a little
bit. Well, I said, do the Phillies need October Bryce to win the World
Series?
And
I said no.
Yeah, because you don't think he's going to be October Bryce.
I don't think he needs to be that, right, because we have other contributing members on this team that have stepped up, so he doesn't have to carry the weight.
Well, so that's a good point. Hopefully he doesn't need to. Like, hopefully Bryce Harper doesn't need to carry the team. Do I expect him to have big moments in October? Yes, absolutely. He hit a home run already October 1st in the intra-squad scrimmage.
See, he knows what
month
it is.
He hit the first home run of October. So I think if that's a sign of things to come for Bryce Harper, it's a very good sign. But I do agree with Hugh in that, like, it's not all on him because we have other guys stepping up.
Let me ask both of you guys this question while Scott's sitting here. What do you think? I want to see what you think, and then I'm going to tell you what I think. What do you think in the postseason has been the Achilles heel for the Phillies?
The bat's
hero ball. Like, to me, it's been kind of hero ball. It's been kind of like, because when I think about that Mets series, I think about how the Mets were, like, to Joe, like, this is a trigger word for Joe when I said about Bryce moving runners. They were playing small ball.
I was trying to come up with the point Hugh made, like, in the middle of the season. It was moving the base runners.
Are y'all going to let me finish my beautiful
you
thought
turned,
that I'm having?
You turned him into Placido Polanco.
See how this goes, Scott? I don't get to talk baseball a lot, but when I make some poignant points, they don't let me talk.
They don't let you cook.
They don't let me cook. Y'all going to let me cook? Y'all going to let me
cook?
But my point is this.
Go away.
It felt to me like a lot of times, especially in that Mets series, that everybody that came up was trying to win the game and that they're at bat. And the point that I was making was it doesn't have to be that type of game, because you got other guys behind you that if you put them in position to be successful, then the team as a collective can be successful.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, I dropped some science on that before. I do think
head to toe, kind of like what we talked about earlier, I think head to toe they have a lot of players that are more confident, feeling better, hitting better at the plate right now than they were a year ago.
Yes.
And that allows you to, you know, again, I do think it's going to take everybody. I think the biggest problem for the Phillies over the last few years has been their bullpen. Over the last 2 years. I mean, I get it. They had some big offensive explosions on different nights, but it was in those close games that they couldn't hold, and there are going to be close games. You are facing the best pitching that you are going to see all season, right? Whether it's this round, the next round, the round after that. That's the nature of playoff baseball. You're going to face the best pitchers that are out there. And you have to be able to have those games where you win 3-2, or you win 4-1, or you win 3-1, because there will be some of those along the way. And when those happen, it is incumbent on the bullpen. If you have a late lead, you got to hold it. You got to hold it.
Well, they have to. And Devin, I think their bullpen in some ways is set up to be better at that, because they have Duran. They have a closer we haven't had here in a very long time.
Yeah.
But in other ways, there's questions. I mean, I have questions about what's going to happen before Duran, right? I like the Robertson signing, but he's not the same pitcher he was 7, 8,
exactly.
9 years ago.
Yeah.
Kirkering's been better the last few weeks, but not great.
Yeah, I know. I totally agree. We were talking about this on the morning show. You know, who do you trust more, the bats or the bullpen? And so many people said the bullpen.
No, I trust the bats more.
Yeah, 100% the bats. The bullpen has been easily the Phillies, you know, shakiest area of the team throughout the season. I mean, even look back to last season. Yeah, the postseason, the bats went cold. But the bullpen also, you know, gave up Grandson. And I know, like, he's bounced back and he's not on the Phillies anymore and what have you. But even guys like Jeff Hoffman, who had been so consistent, yeah, like, they kind of fell apart. We're not even looking at a falling apart situation here. I just haven't seen enough from anyone in the Phillies bullpen, really outside of Duran, and he's even given up some stuff, to make me feel like, oh, okay, great, you know, Orion Kerkering's going in, we got this. Instead, it's going to be like, oh, man, you know, Matt Strom's going in, let's cross our fingers and hope it goes well. So, I mean, I don't know the solution, but I guess just keep your fingers crossed for the bullpen.
Yeah. And hope the guys that have performed in the past perform. Like Strom. Yeah. I mean, Strom's had a lot of success against Ohtani, so I think we're going to see a lot of that. The other thing that is interesting to me about this series is we have something we haven't had in the last 4 years, which is a big name on the bench that could be deployed late. It's been a weird season, Scott, for Nick Castellanos. But there's not many teams that have 250 home runs sitting on the bench in a game. Right. And look, all those years ago, it was Matt Stairs hit a big home run against the Dodgers in a pinch-hitting role. If Topper starts Kepler in these games against the Dodgers righties, at some point, that's going to be Castellanos' moment, right? The Dodgers have a lot of lefties in their bullpen. Vesia, he's hit before. I feel like Castellanos could play a big role in this series. I don't know if he's going to come through, but I could see a moment where it's the seventh inning, Kepler's due up, and here comes Nick Castellanos pinch-hitting. Like, he could change the whole story on his season with one hit.
Absolutely. And I think there's probably a big hit or two in that bat still, and he will be given opportunities. I believe that, because I think there are going to be enough spots where somebody, either Brandon or Kepler, has to face a really tough left-hander coming out of the bullpen, somebody like Vesia or whatever, that you're going to prefer to go to the right-handed bat. And I don't know that Nick's going to go off the way he did, say, against the Braves and that NLDS, but
you know, Jones got beat up in that series too.
But
yeah,
weren't you there to protect him?
I was, but it was fun, Scott. It was
fun. Just too fun.
Well,
he was
laughing until he had to step in, and he kind of yelled at the guy, and then the guy
Scott,
walked away.
Okay.
What are we talking about?
So Hugh and I went down in 2023 when the Phillies played the Braves in the first round.
Uh-huh.
We went there for games 1 and 2,
yes.
And the Phillies won game 1, and I was chirping a little bit to Braves fans,
okay.
And then I wasn't quite thinking how many of them there were in verse one of me.
Oh.
So a few of them started to like walk over, and I felt like I was in a little trouble. And then Hugh was like 10 feet behind me, and then he spoke up, and the guys walked away.
I think you're
Hugh is your bodyguard.
Yeah, yeah.
I think you got a 1-0 lead. You got Hugh on your wing. I think you're
I knew I was okay.
A little bit. Yeah.
It was hilarious because
that's amazing.
Because that was like our first year. Wasn't it like our first year
doing the show? Yeah.
Yeah, and I didn't know Joe was an instigator.
Well, to be fair, I had a little liquid courage. You know,
well,
it was nine innings of baseball.
Red October does that to you. It does that to you. I remember standing down, like, on the concourse. It was the first game that the Mets were here last postseason. And they didn't have a ton of fans there, but there were still too many Mets fans for my liking. And one lady was just, like, chirping like crazy. And I had my credential and I was working, so I had to, like, contain myself.
Yeah.
But Ike Reese was next to me too, and I could tell we were both just like, don't say anything, don't say anything. It's hard.
It is hard.
So I don't blame you, especially
ready,
if you have some liquid courage.
Some
in
you was about to throw hands there.
They
I don't see you as a hand thrower.
maybe not hand thrower.
You
maybe more like word thrower.
You're a word thrower.
Especially to the Mets fans. Yeah. You got to teach them a lesson. They're annoying.
They're so annoying.
Okay, we could be back to being professionals. Okay, we're back.
It's a good story. We don't bring it up enough. When I almost got beat up in Atlanta until Hugh Douglas stepped in. All right.
That is really funny.
Yeah, I had a second where I was like, oh, this might go bad.
No, I wasn't going to let them put hands on.
But to be fair, Hugh, there were like 30,000 of them and two of us.
Oh, yeah, but you know, but here's been my – you knock one person out, then everybody else don't want – they don't want that smoke. You just like the gorilla fight.
Yeah.
Remember
when
I told you when the gorilla,
he
rips off one person's arms. The other 99 people don't want their arms ripped off.
Are
so
we
they
talking
think about
100
about
men versus one gorilla
yes.
again?
I thought you were back to being professionals.
Kyle's got his eye on you.
I was.
All right,
Devin.
Topper's going to talk at 1:15 today.
Yes,
we're going to air that live.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm sure he's going to be asked a lot of things, lineup, roster. Mm-hmm. But one thing I'm curious of, because when he was on the morning show a couple days ago, he seemed to allude to the idea that Aaron Nola could get a start in this series. And yeah. I had kind of put that out of my mind. I thought, okay, LCS, World Series, right? You need four starters. Okay, I'll live with that. Mm-hmm. I didn't think he'd get a start in this series. I'm starting to think he's going to. What do you think about that? Because I just keep coming back to, seems like we're overthinking it. We have three better starters than him. We only need three starters.
Yeah.
I wouldn't start him against the Dodgers. What do you think about it?
I mean, I didn't think until I heard Rob Thompson's comments that Aaron Nola would get a start, at least in this series. I mean, I know his last start in the regular season was the best that we've seen him, but that's still not enough for me to go off confidence-wise. I heard Scott talking to you guys before I came on saying, you know, if they do put him in, I think they'd be extremely cautious with him. You just hope that if he does get a start and he doesn't have his best stuff, they don't take him out. Like, they don't leave him in too long.
Right.
And then it's, you know, who do you put in when you take him out? Because does it become a full bullpen game? Is it Walker Buehler? Is it, I don't know. I don't know what the solution there is. So I want to say just go with Sanchez, Ranger, Luzardo, see if you can win the first three, but then do you really want Aaron Nola in like a game four, game five spot, right? So I don't really like any of it. You know how I said I would have my fingers crossed when certain guys from the bullpen go into the
yep.
game? I think that's how I would be the entire game that Aaron Nola is pitching. But hopefully if he does get a start, he can, you know, have the same stuff we saw last time he had it now.
Yeah, I could just like sense next week it's going to be a big conversation on this radio
yeah.
station if Aaron Nola is about to pitch a game two or a game three. I mean, Hugh, you've been supportive of the idea of it. It feels risky to me for a guy who had as uneven of a regular season as he did.
Yeah, but you know, when I think Topper said it, like, you know, you believe in the guy what's on the back of his baseball card or something like that. So you give him a shot, but like I said, you can't have those innings where, you know, it's a little rocky for him and you know, you let him work his way out of it. He has to come out there and he has to be on point from the beginning.
Yeah.
And if he's not, then you have to make that decision quickly.
Well, and Scott, this is a question for you. If he does get it, if Aaron Nola does get a start in the NLDS, what game would he get the start in, do you think?
I think he would get it in game two.
Okay. I'd be more okay with that than a
And the reason I say that
Can
is
Can we be up 1-0 for that game?
Right. Yeah.
Well,
as long
I think
as we
the
win
reason
tomorrow.
I do think the reason they would do it there is because I don't think it's necessarily a situation where they say we're going to start Aaron and we're going to let him go 7 innings and we're expecting him to go 7. I do think it would be more of a situation where you start him. Dodgers throw their lineup out there for a right-handed pitcher and then you see Luzardo at some point mid-game, and then he goes a ways. And and that would be his start day, and then again, he could then then you could come back in game five, and he could start, or Nola could start, or you could run something similar either way. But I think if they were going to do it, it would be game two. Now, again, it's all speculation.
Yep.
I doubt that we're going to hear from Rob today what his plan is for game two.
Do you think if they – I was kidding, but do you think if they win game one, it affects the plan? Or if they lose game one? Or do you think the plan is the plan? Because
I think the plan is the plan.
Okay.
I do. I think they probably have the plan being the idea that they're up 1-0 or down 0-1 is already factored in.
Right.
They've already discussed that.
They baked it in.
Well,
yeah,
that's on Wednesday before the scrimmage. Rob said he knows what the rotation will be. And that was before they even knew they were facing the Dodgers. He just said he wasn't going to tell us yet.
Okay. Yeah, and I imagine he won't tell us today either, because why let the Dodgers know? All right, before we let you guys go, Topper's going to speak at 1:15. Ben Davis is going to join us coming up in the next hour. Need an X factor from each of you. Like, let the Phillies win this series. Who's the guy we're talking about? He's a big reason why. And you could give a big name, you can give a role player, whoever you want, but an X factor. Earlier in the show, Hugh mentioned Alec Bohm, who's going to probably hit cleanup. I think Matt Strom could play a big role because he feels like the Ohtani guy for late in the game. Scott, who are you thinking? An X factor.
I love those two picks, both of them, because I think you're right on that Strom's going to be asked to do that more than once. Maybe 5 times, quite frankly, at some point during each game. I think they're going to need help offensively from people 4 through 9. And I'll say somebody like Brandon Marsh, who's going to hit in the middle of the order, who's going to face right-handed pitching, He'll face his old teammate, Shohei Ohtani.
That's right.
Maybe he'll be a little jazzed up to do something big in that regard. But, yeah, I'll go with Brandon. Hmm.
Devin, who are you thinking?
I'm going to go with Trey Turner. We haven't seen him play in a game in a bit because he was on the 10-day with that hamstring strain, and I know a lot of people are worried. You know, he's not going to be ready to go. He looked good to me in the scrimmage, and what we've seen from the last few guys who have come back from a small injury, like Sosa, like Bohm, they come back and immediately have a pretty big game mm-hmm. offensively. So I'm hoping that Trey Turner can come in and not miss a beat leading off.
So he joined us about like 11:30 earlier in the show.
You can go
back in the Odyssey app and listen. One thing that I took note of, and I get it, but he said he hasn't gone 100% yet. Mm. And look, he hasn't had to, right? He played a few innings on Sunday. It was a scrimmage on Wednesday. I just, for my sake as a fan, I need to see him get an infield hit in the first inning tomorrow night. Like, just show me you can run. And I think maybe it'll be out of his head. Look, he said he feels good. Devin, I think it's a huge one because he's been great this season. He won the batting title.
They need
that version of Trey Turner. Hopefully they get it. Scott, we appreciate you being here for the hour. And enjoy this. I know you say you don't take it for granted. We love listening, and we'll be listening tomorrow night.
All right, sounds good.
Devin, thank you for being here. And I'll see you tomorrow. We're doing a show together, right, tomorrow?
Yes, 2 to 4.
2 to 4.
Me and Rube get to hang out.
It's going to be fun tomorrow afternoon at the ballpark. All right, coming up on the other side, your calls, Ben Davis, and we will bring you Rob Thompson's press conference. We are live, stateside live. Come on out with us. It is the Red October Rally. You can park in Lot S and walk over. Stateside Live, formerly Xfinity Live. Come on out. It is a Red October Rally on Sports Radio 94 WIP.
Listen up, everybody. Hatfield just dropped 2 new bacon flavors that you just got to try. First up, that Scott looks. We got cracked pepper thick cut bacon, black pepper coated in a full bold taste. Then there's the one that I forgot yesterday. It's the Black Forest thick-cut bacon. Mmm, it sounds tasty. Smoked to perfection with a touch of sweetness. Whether you're firing it up for breakfast or stacking it on a BLT, these bacons bring big flavor. Bacon is serious business around these parts, and nobody does it better than Hatfield. Visit simply Hatfield.com for a retail location near you. Hatfield, better care, better pork.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.